So, yeah, I'll be reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, text 38, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Vishayendriya Sangyogad.
Vishayendriya Sangyogad.
Yattad Agre Mritopamam.
Yattad Agre Mritopamam.
Parirname Vishamiva.
Parirname Vishamiva.
Tatsukham Rajasam Smritam.
Tatsukham Rajasam Smritam.
Vishayendriya Sangyogad.
Vishayendriya Sangyogad.
Yattadagre Mritopamam.
Yattadagre Mritopamam.
Hariname Vishamiva.
Hariname Vishamiva.
Tatsukham Rajasam Smritam.
Tatsukham Rajasam Smritam.
That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects and which appears like nectar at first but poison at the end is said to be of the nature of passion. Purport: a young man and a young woman meet, and the senses drive the young man to see her, to touch her, and to have sexual intercourse. In the beginning, this may be very pleasing to the senses, but at the end or after some time, it becomes just like poison. They are separated, or there is divorce, there is lamentation, there is sorrow, etc. Such happiness is always in the mode of passion. Happiness derived from a combination of the senses and the sense objects is always a cause of distress and should be avoided by all means. Deva Madhava Prabhu asked me to speak about widespread cultural phenomenon here in the Western world. Before I get to that, I'll discuss this verse and then bring it round to that because it's all related. This is practical psychology, not exactly spiritual instruction. In Bhagavad Gita, it's not all spiritual instruction. It all leads to spiritual instruction, but it's not all spiritual instruction. For instance, much of the instruction, well, actually the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita, the manifest purpose of Krishna speaking to Arjuna was to induce Arjuna to fight. He gave various reasons for doing so, ultimately spiritual, which many people might think, how can it be spiritual to fight? That's what Arjuna thought. How can it be religious to fight? Actually, Arjuna wasn't thinking about anything spiritual at all. Only Krishna brought in the subject matter. But Arjuna thought it was against the principle of religion to fight, and on the basis of religion, dharma, his duty as a kshatriya, his social duty. You want to put the books down instead of holding them all the time? Yeah. Okay. You can put them back in the box. So on the basis of his social duty. So that's not directly spiritual, but it is concerned with religious principles for civilized people, which forms the cultural basis for understanding and acting on spiritual principles. The spiritual principle is discussed at the beginning and throughout Bhagavad Gita, the spiritual principle that we are not only human beings, but all living beings, life is consciousness. that is separate from the body, which is matter, composed of matter. Matter is analyzed by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita as being of two divisions, gross matter and subtle matter. Gross matter consists of Bhumirapa, Nalavayu, Kam, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And subtle matter consists of Man, Buddhi, Ahankar, the mind, intelligence, and false ego. In the material world, everyone is trying to get happiness on the basis of the misconception that they are the body. So spiritual understanding begins with understanding that we're not the body, and that our real self-interest is on realizing that we are spiritual and acting on that platform. So ultimately, Arjuna agreed to fight, understanding that in this case, not in every case, but in his particular case, at that time, for him to fight would be spiritual because it would satisfy Krishna. Now, in this material world, everyone wants to be happy. Now, not only every living being, the nature of every living being is to seek happiness. And every living being, everything that they do, all their mental endeavors also, if their consciousness is developed to have mental endeavors, if it's developed to that level, is aimed at becoming happy and avoiding any causes of unhappiness, such as danger or excessive heat or cold and so on. Every living being, even the plants, grow toward the sunlight. So although their consciousness is not very developed, that tendency is there. The living being identifies with the body and therefore tries to nourish the body. Now here in this verse, Krishna speaks about happiness in the mode of passion. Happiness, of course, is experienced within the mind. But in material existence, it's considered that happiness arises from the interaction of the senses with the sense objects. By seeing things that we like to see, hearing things that we like to hear, touching, this is the example that Srila Prabhupada gives in the purport, the touch, happiness via the touch sensation is principally via sexual contact. It's also, there can be happiness by touch, touching something smooth like velvet can give some satisfaction, or going into a hot room, warm room after being in the cold, and vice versa, going into a cool room after being in the heat. So this is happiness via the touch sensation, but principally the touch sensation is satisfied by sexual contact. Touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, hearing. We presume that we will have happiness like this, and that discomfort, that is the cause of our unhappiness. And that is certainly one kind of happiness. But Krishna warns here that although it can seem like nectar in the beginning, it transforms into just like poison. Krishna already spoke this earlier in Bhagavad Gita. Anyone? Yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yonya evate adyantavanta kantaya nateshu ramate buddhaha. Sangsparsha Jabhoga means the same as Vishayendriya Samyoga, the interaction of the senses with the enjoyment that is imagined by the interaction of the senses with the sense objects, actually gives rise to distress. Here, in this verse, in the 18th chapter, Krishna says, it seems like nectar in the beginning, but it transforms into poison. But earlier he said that even in the beginning, even before, even the very contemplation of sense enjoyment, the act of sense enjoyment and the consequences, they are causes of distress. And therefore, Krishna says, an intelligent person doesn't take part in it. That means even in the contemplation, we think, I will be happy by enjoying myself, by whatever it is, eating such and such food, drinking such and such a drink, sexual pleasure. But even that enjoyment is mixed with a sense of frustration, because as long as we don't have it, we're desiring to have it. So we're caught in the, I want it, I want it, I want it, I want it. And in the actual enjoyment, there's no real enjoyment there. Something is there. Like the example is given, like a drop of water in a desert. There's no desert in this area. But you can imagine going to a desert where it's plus 50 Celsius. How much is that in Fahrenheit? 120, something like that? Anyway.
Sounds about right.
Sounds about right, yeah. So, if you've been in such a temperature, anyone? Yeah? You go in Vrindavan in the summer. It's very hot. Very, very hot. And you want, the natural antidote to that is water, drinking water. If you don't have water, you feel like you're going to die, and you actually will die. So if you're dying in the desert, and so someone comes in by helicopter and says, I got some water for you. Open your mouth, put out your tongue, and you're in anticipation. They bring a dropper and put one drop. It's water, but it won't satisfy. It won't satisfy. You feel more tortured. So that's the nature of material happiness. We're never satisfied. We think it's going to satisfy us, but it doesn't satisfy us. This example can be given. That's actually, Srila Prabhupada used to quote that, drop of water in the desert. Quote that's from Vidyapati. Kamala Dala Jala is this Bajahure Mana. That's a different example altogether. Tartala Saikate. It's in Maitali. Vari Bindu Sama. Sutta Mitta Ramani Samaje. A drop of this happiness that we get from friends, family, society, it's like a drop of water in the desert. So, a drop of water is bad enough, but if there's potassium cyanide mixed in it, is it worse? So, or maybe just plain water is worse, then you die slowly in the desert. But the follow-up also, the reactions that we have to suffer, very painful. Life in the material world is painful. If you're living in a house like this, in how much would this house cost? $500,000, something like that? Rates are going up and down, something like that, is it? So I may think, why? Where's the distress? You have a nice house, nice neighborhood, earning plenty of money. That is called Maya, illusion. The illusion of thinking that I am happy in my nice house, with my nice car, and my nice wife or husband. Of course, if they're devotees, then they are nice. Otherwise, it's just an illusion of being happy. Why is that? Because it all turns to poison. We may think I'm very happy, but those who think they're very happy, they suffer more in course of time, as we are separated from our objects of happiness, as inevitably time separates us, and from that which we are attached to, we become very attached to all these things, and we have to suffer old age, disease, death. You've heard it all before. Well, it's true. It's not just something that we say as a religious formula. It's a fact. It's not dogma. It's a fact that this mature world is full of suffering. And this modern civilization, or any so-called civilization, it's all based on this principle. There are civilizations based on religious practices also, but mostly they don't have clear knowledge of the soul. So the religion is also, mostly religion in this world, is petitioning God or gods to bless us so that we can enjoy better in this world. So it's another manifestation of ignorance of our actual spiritual position, which is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, Satchidananda. So this verse explains the position of most human beings and of pretty much all that goes on in the name of civilization. We're endeavoring for happiness. We don't get happiness. And it seems like we're going to be happy, but ultimately we suffer. Now, the point you had raised, I'll come to that. Now, this is very, very prominent in America, the culture of thinking that we will be happy by material enjoyment. It's very, very prominent. People all over the world, they think that Americans are very materialistic. They're right. They're also materialistic, but in America, it's unabashed. One of the reasons is there has been, for the last, 80 years or so, surplus wealth. Many people have had more money than they need for their basic needs. Many people. And the culture of consumerism. One reason that people in other countries are not so materialistic is because they don't have the money to buy so many things. So the culture of buying things and throwing them away and getting new things is not there so much, because if you don't have the money to buy things, then it doesn't apply. So this culture of consumerism has brought this tendency, let me enjoy the senses. It has brought it to the very center of the culture, that the whole culture is based on get money, purchase, and enjoy the senses. and sensual enjoyment should go on constantly. With all the time you have to be listening to some music. Maybe not constantly, but continually, which means almost constantly. There should be something for the tongue. So many things of meals, snacks, coffee, chewing gum, soft drinks, hard drinks. Always there should be something for the tongue. And always stimulation everywhere, advertisements. Men and women dressed, especially young people, in a way that outlines the contours of the body for enticing the opposite sex, or nowadays for many the same sex, for sensual gratification. Don't laugh, you'll get locked up. So the whole civilization is based on the idea, and in fact they proudly stated that America provides a civilization in which everyone can pursue happiness to the greatest extent. The problem is they don't know what happiness is. They think that happiness means if you have more money, more fashions, big house, big car, Detroit. Now it's small cars. Used to be big cars. When you were a kid, it must have been all big cars, gas guzzlers. And
oh, yeah, big ones.
Yeah. But it's all a mistake. One verse from Bhagavad Gita can understand. The whole civilization is a mistake. It's not that other places are better than America, it's just that they didn't, just at this present phase in time, they didn't have the opportunity to do what they'd like to do, which is why people like to immigrate to America. Or they used to, still, some are coming. Many. All based on the misunderstanding that we should be happy by sense enjoyment. Another major problem with that is that everyone else is also trying to get sense enjoyment, and it becomes a competition and a competition for resources. And apart from the gross enjoyment of touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, hearing, then there's also this subtle enjoyment of showing that I'm a better sense enjoyer than you. And there's also competition for resources. Therefore, at the individual and international level, there are conflicts. You can find the whole human society summed up in this one verse of Bhagavad Gita. Everything can be understood. Plus, the whole culture is one of enjoyment, showing oneself to be a better enjoyer than others. And this naturally leads to conflict. And when we're in conflict with others, It may, some people may enjoy that, but it's too much to be in conflict with everyone all the time. And that with the sense of friends and enemies, which is intrinsic to a civilization in ignorance, with that, then we want some people to be friendly with. Otherwise, we want people to share our sense gratification with. We want that people will praise us and approve of us. And it's also fun to have some enemies. We may like that. And that's systematized in sports. That you have your local team, whatever it is. In India it's cricket, and here it's baseball and football and basketball. Those are the three main sports of America. And then you cheer on your team, and the other team, you don't like them. So it's a systematized like and dislike. But in the course of daily life also, there is between people who are trying to enjoy their senses and show themselves better at it than others and becoming frustrated and not becoming actually happy, then there's a lot of what is now fashionably called toxicity, toxic interactions. Coming to the point of your query. So there may be some systems which sense enjoyers set up so as to lessen this the toxicity or to toxicness and to try to create a society in which everyone is nice and peaceful and happy. The country I was born in this time around has the British are known as being very polite. Yes, please, no, thank you, and so on. And Americans who go to Britain, they often think, oh, these people are very polite. They don't know the subtleties that the British... You can say to someone, you can say something very polite, but just by the tone of voice, someone can say, no, thank you. And from the tone of voice, you can understand, get out of here, you jerk. That's what's meant. But they say it sounds very, oh, he's being very polite. But they don't understand the subtleties involved. So there have been many, many books and seminars invented on how to live the life of a peaceful sense enjoyer and a nice sense enjoyer. Maybe the first one that came to prominence was How to Win Friends and Influence People. It would be the discovery, if you're nice to people, they're nice to you. It's good for business. Think and Grow Rich, things like this. The idea is like that. That, you know, and then that got developed into the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and then there's value-based business and this and that. But ultimately, all this I was just coming on Delta Airlines, and they have some little video which runs before the safety announcement that. At Delta, we put you, the customer, first. BS. I won't say it fully because Vaishnav shouldn't. But you know that it's the dollar comes first, not the customer. And they're telling you that because they want customers, because customers give them money, and that's the. So we put you first. And the customer also knows the money comes. So the staff are trained to be as nice as they can because they're not really that nice. They don't feel like being nice, but they're trained to smile at you. And actually, on Delta, they don't even smile at you. And be polite and. Because the idea is, if you treat the customers badly, they'll take their business somewhere else next time. So it makes good business sense to be nice. But the niceness is not coming from the soul, not coming from even from the heart. It's all calculated, and it may become quite sophisticated. What was that you told me? They're all ways, techniques for dealing with people. What's that? Anger management?
Compassionate communication.
What's all that about?
What you're speaking about, Maharaj.
Could you? I didn't hear. I actually never heard of this before.
Well, they're mental adjustments for how to be
Mental adjustment, how to deal with people.
How to be respectful to people's own considerations for happiness. And
how to be, I see. So thinking of others when you communicate with them, not thinking of your own agenda only. That's there in Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Atma upamyena, what is it? Atma upamyena samyena, what is it? Atma upamyena sarvatra. Samam pashyati yojana sukham va yadiva dukham sa yogi paramo mataha. Krishna says that one who always sees that other I experience happiness and distress in this world, and others also do. So we should consider that in our dealings with others. So and see others just like we see ourselves. It's like the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And Krishna says such a person is considered to be the best yogi. So there's an idea like that. That we should deal with others, taking into consideration the other person. There is famous anecdote, apparently it's true, of a man in a New York subway, and his kids were there, and they were yelling and screaming. And someone said to him that, "Why don't you control your kids?" Or you should. Now in Britain they would say that. But in America, they would say you should control your kids, right? And the man said, "I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I'm just trying to think how to break to them the news that their mother has just died." So dealing with others, they may be doing something wrong, but we may take into account there may be extenuating circumstances. There may be some reason for it that we're not aware of. So giving others the benefit of the doubt, that's one part of empathetic behavior. And there are all kinds of systems worked out how to do this. So that's good, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
It's better than just having a brawl with everyone you meet. at least a verbal brawl. And no one likes people who are really rude and unpleasant. But you're suggesting there may be some problem with this also. There's a problem with everything in this material world which is based on ignorance of the goal of life. Everything that we do, if it's not aimed at fulfilling the goal of life, the real goal of life, which is to understand our spiritual position as a servant of Krishna, then it simply binds us in this material world. So although it's definitely better to be nice rather than not nice, that can also be a kind of trap. That we think that just being nice is, well, that's all there is to it. Be nice is... Be polite as you cut the roast beef and serve it out. Do it politely. The
someone is giving a McDonald's hamburger and they say, have a great day. They don't mean it. They're not having a great any day. For a McDonald's worker isn't great. And no one's day is great. But they say it because they're told to say it because they want it. I presume so, because everywhere you go, people in America, they say, have a great day. They used to say in England, have a good day. And in America became a great day. Because, but no one's having a great day. So that ignorance produces a culture in which people worked out that we can be more happy in this world if we're nice to each other. And we can even try and mean it. And they might really try to mean it. But due to ignorance, they can't actually help each other. So ignorance of what? Ignorance of our position that of its spiritual beings, eternal servants of Krishna. Without knowing this, then all our endeavors are like groping in the dark. Without knowing this, however much we try to be happy, we can never succeed. It's not possible. There's a formula for being happy, for being actually happy. There's nothing wrong with being. We're not saying happiness is wrong. There are some people who think that, well, happiness is wrong. We should just mortify the body and deny any kind of happiness. No, we say, be happy. Everyone should be happy. But we should know how to be happy. Otherwise, any endeavor to be happy without knowing how to be happy is striving in the wrong direction. And it ultimately causes distress to ourselves and to others. In some ways, the being nice kind of happiness is more dangerous than the being nasty kind of happiness. If it reinforces a sense that, well, everything's nice in this world, but simply being polite to others, although again, it's in general, it's better than being nasty to others. In general, not always. Sometimes, apparently, being nasty is better than being polite. Yeah, it can be. For instance, maybe you're not supposed to do this these days, but if the father shouts at the son, "Don't do that!" Or in days gone by, you might even slap him. So that nastiness is based on, should be, the best motive for the father to do that is not just because the boy is disturbing him, but so he can train the boy. At that age, he requires to be trained how to behave properly so that he can grow up and be a well-behaved citizen and not be a nasty, selfish person. Children, they're generally extremely selfish. So that's all they know. In the beginning, all they know is themselves. Then gradually they come to recognize their mother and father, if they have a live-in father. They come to recognize, these are my well-wishers, and therefore they like them. And they become afraid of others who come harm them. And then gradually, as they grow older, they're supposed to, it's expected that they don't become as self-centered, as ego. A baby is a bundle of egoism. Everything, if I don't get what I want, immediately scream. But when you get older, you're supposed to, you're not supposed to do that. And you're supposed to think of others also. That's called becoming mature. So the parent may discipline the child so that the child comes out of that egoism. Sometimes we see there's a phrase, spoiled children. Do you say that? Spoiled brats, like that. The parents just indulge the child all the time. And so he grows up to be obnoxious because he just thinks the whole world is meant, everyone should just do what I want. But in general, it's better to be polite, considerate. But ultimately, if the whole civilization is set up on the idea that we should be happy by enjoying our senses, then there's no real proper consideration of others. We can see in the Western world now, there's very great fear of terrorism. Anytime, any place. Especially in public gatherings, there can be a terrorist attack, and then senselessly, dozens of people may be killed. But we don't think how systematically, daily, we're torturing and killing millions of animals. They feel pain. We means not anyone here. And not even most of the people in Detroit. It's only a few people who actually do the torturing, but they're servicing the others. And those animals feel pain, as we feel pain. So that's also a form of terrorism. And the result comes back in the form of wars, terrorism, disasters, and so on. What goes around comes around. Karmic reactions. So the being nice is on the basis that, well, if we're all nice to each other, we can all nicely enjoy sense gratification together. But we don't consider that how much suffering we're causing to other living beings. Somehow the idea has come that other living beings don't matter, but they feel pain. And in fact, the whole Western world is living in comfort and drinking coffee and tea, and we're drinking coffee, and very nice. But how much exploitation of human beings has gone into a cup of coffee in engaging people to work in indentured labor in many cases? And even the land, the people, the coffees, beans, or whatever it is grown on, that was formerly people were cultivating it for their own subsistence, and then some generations ago they were forced off the land so that the companies could grow coffee and make a profit. So there's so much in this niceness. There's a lot of hypocrisy, because the idea is that we should be nice, but we put barriers, mental barriers. We can't see beyond. The niceness ends here. Not for the animals, not for people of other countries. So there's this... There's a karmic inbuilt reaction to all of this. And also that hypocrisy that can never be ultimately auspicious. And that kind of being nice also, it's on the basis of a great mistake of thinking that I and all others, I am meant for enjoying this world, and others also, we will be nice and together we'll enjoy this world. Just like when Srila Prabhupada was present here in America, among the young people, the common slogan was, make love, not war. They wanted peace. Now, why should we fight in Vietnam? They wanted to live peacefully. So, and peacefully enjoy sense gratification, which is an act of forgetfulness of Krishna, rebelliousness against Krishna. This psychology they can't understand. It's deep psychology, because they only see the mind, and they don't know what the mind is. They have no understanding of the mind. And the very thing which causes them distress, they take that to be the cause of pleasure. And therefore, there must be so much unhappiness in human society. We want to be happy, but we don't know how to. We're trying to be happy on the same basis, ultimately, that the animals are. Sense enjoyment. That's how the law of karma works. If we want to enjoy plenty of sex, then in the next life we can become a chimpanzee or a pigeon. They can enjoy sex much better than the humans, and with no difficulty of having to get money and a house and all this kind of. You need money in the modern life. You just can't enjoy. You have to make some facility for the woman, or you go to a prostitute in Thailand. I used to live in Thailand for some time. There's a saying, "Mi nung mi pu ying," which means if you have money, you have a woman. That's it. They worked it. They worked it out. That's all. It's just down to the basics. Strip it down from all the romance and. You have money, you have a woman, that's all. The dogs, they don't have any such need. Dogs and cats and chimpanzees and whatever. Just male is there, female is there, and they enjoy. But there's no question of self-realization for them, and there's no question of happiness for them, of actual happiness. It might seem a happy life to be a chimpanzee, jump around in the jungle. It's a very strong, healthy body. Olympic Games gymnasts, they're nothing to the chimpanzees. The world champion gold medalists, any ordinary chimpanzee is better than them. They're where they do so much practice, this, that. So if you like to be a very lithe gymnast, then in your next life you can become a chimpanzee. These people, they work so hard training to lift the big weights, get a huge body, and you bring any baby elephant, they can lift up, not even a fully grown elephant, they can lift up a big weight. So in the next life they can get born as an elephant. They have that desire. That they remain, there's no opportunity except in the human form of life to understand these essential teachings of Bhagavad Gita. And that is why this whole culture of be nice, I'm okay, you're okay, it's not okay, there's something intrinsically wrong with it. What's intrinsically wrong with it? The idea that we shall all be happy in this material world. The idea that as long as someone doesn't cause any harm to others, he should be allowed to indulge in whatever gives him happiness. But that is based on ignorance. The very idea that we are here in this world to enjoy ourselves for sense gratification binds us to this material world, causes us to be born again and again and again, and die again and again and again. This human form of life, This human life is very rarely attained. Only in human life can we pursue a spiritual realization which culminates in Krishna consciousness. In other forms of life, it's not possible, but they don't even know that there's life after death. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. Again and again getting born and again, they don't know. It's very developed technologically and very backward in terms of actual knowledge of our existential position. So we should be very careful about these formulae which are worked out by sense enjoyers, materialistic people, for the sake of creating an atmosphere of mutual, peaceful ignorance, in which they think that we will be happy by enjoying sense gratification. It's amazing. One verse of Bhagavad Gita just gives the whole situation of society, the whole mistake of society. It's based on the idea that we shall be happy by interacting the senses with the sense objects. But practically we can see people are not happy. Doesn't give happiness. There's a sense of, in modern terms we'd call that an adrenaline rush or a sense of satisfaction when you win the world, what is that, the Olympic game? Actually, this Olympic Games is just increasing suffering because people, they practice so hard. Most of them don't even get admitted, those who are trying to get admitted. And out of those who get admitted into the games, only one wins and all the rest are disappointed. And the one who wins, they cheer him for a few seconds and then they forget it and they go off to the next contest. It's sad, actually, how much people they invest into this. It's just how much invest, I mean, in terms of importance. They've invented so many ways to forget Krishna. It's amazing. And with all this new computer, what do they call that, animation, and you can invent all the imagination can come in all kinds of fantastic ways to imagine all kinds of ways, but divorced from reality. So, devotees, they should chant Hare Krishna and try to imbibe that culture whereby, that culture which is conducive for advancing in Krishna consciousness. It's not a denying culture in the sense that we deny any happiness, but rather, talking like this might give the impression of Puritanism. Now, those of you from an Indian background probably don't know what that is. Puritans were a sect of, in fact, America, one of the reasons that America came up as it did was due to these Catholic and Protestant rivalry in Europe. So people came so that they could practice their religious beliefs unimpeded and without the risk of being persecuted or killed for doing so. So the Puritans, that word is still quite common in English today. A sect of Protestants who became very prominent in England. When was that? Was that the early 17th century? You know, anyone, any history buffs here? Oliver Cromwell and company. So their idea was that any enjoyment is against God. So you shouldn't. They were again celebrating Christmas, which was nothing like it is today, but it was a festival. So people would have nice food by their estimation. We wouldn't even dream of eating it, what they call nice food. And there should be no dancing or singing. It's not your religion, is it? Not our religion. So, and then people should dress in very plain clothes, and even the religious services should be very, very much in the mood of gravity and no fun, no enjoyment. Their idea is that enjoyment goes against the will of God. We're all sinners in this world, and we should all be in the mood of repentance only. So, all right, repentance, that's good, but ultimately Krishna wants us to be happy because he's happy and he wants to share his happiness with us, the happiness of selfless love. So we don't say no enjoyment, we say be happy fully, but we have to know how to be happy. Actual non-exploitive happiness means that we all take Krishna as the center of our life and we all co-jointly work together to satisfy Krishna. And Krishna is very easily satisfied. It's much easier to satisfy Krishna than to win an Olympic medal. Everyone can do it. Everyone is eligible. No one is banned. No one is bad. Even the criminals in the prison can satisfy Krishna simply by chanting his name with love. Especially if we chant. The more we put our heart into it, the more Krishna is satisfied. By chanting, by discussing this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, just by discussing this, he becomes worshipped. Then what shall we eat? Well, we'll eat that which is offered to Krishna with love. So we don't say don't enjoy. We say be happy, but not on this exploitive platform. And this understanding is at the basis of Krishna conscious culture. All cultures have an underlying worldview, whether it's explicitly outlined or not. So the predominating culture in the world at the present time is one of consumerism, the idea that you get money, or even you don't have money. You just have a card and you have debts. Isn't it? And you spend it, and that makes the economy roll on. And in opposition to this, it's a major factor in the world situation at the present time. In opposition to this is what is called fundamentalist Islam, which says, no, we don't want to live like this. We want to follow the Islamic way of life. That's actually, it's a protest behind all the bombs and this and that. That we don't want to have this foisted on us. It was this Ayatollah Khomeini who was the religious leader of the Iranian Revolution, which marked the beginning. They didn't know at the time, but it was the beginning of a revival of Islamic pride. So he said, America is the great Satan. Americans were shocked. Well, we're not the great Satan, we're nice people. But his idea was that this whole culture of just mindless enjoyment, which leads to breakdown of the family, which leads to hedonism, which leads to women being seen as and seeing themselves as sexual objects. He considered this the work of Satan. So see, the underlying current of the consumer society is enjoy yourself with various objects. And here Krishna says that this whole endeavor to enjoy objects might seem like pleasure, but it converts into poison. And therefore we see so many people there unhappy on psychiatric treatment. Psychiatric treatment means they're on pills, so many pills. Prozac is a household name. Is that still the most popular drug? A few years ago, I came to America, and people saying, oh, I'm on Prozac, he's on Prozac. What's this? Everyone knows. It's just so common. So many people on drugs. Why? What's that Prozac? It's for depression, is it? It's for depression. Very sad state. When a drug that is an antidote for depression, the name of it is a household word. Very sad state of affairs. So this adjustment, simply trying to be nice to each other, it's a good idea in some ways, but if the whole basis of the civilization is mistaken, then we can't expect that making some adjustment is going to radically alter that. So Vaishnav culture is based on amicable dealings with Krishna in the center, with the understanding that we are meant for Krishna. We are meant to serve Krishna. Thinking about that, thinking about others, I guess it's getting a bit late since everyone has to go to work and everything. Well, what is the time? 9:30. So maybe 9:55. I'm more 9:55. I better finish now. My sense of time is completely out. For me, it's the night is over.
You're just waking up.
Let me see. I think it's 6 hours time difference from where I came from, and maybe I'm not sure because this maybe daylight savings time makes it. So yeah, it's already it's the end of Mangalarti where I came from. So yeah, more or less. What that Vaishnav culture is, that is a great topic, but that's maybe for another time. So I won't take questions now because it is late. Sorry for that. Talk, and I have to walk the talk also, do what I say. Hare Krishna, thank you so much for coming. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.